Welcome to Skin Deep. I'm Dr. Anna Chacon, and today we have a very special guest joining us. Get ready for some expert insights you won't want to miss. Let's dive right in.
Thanks for coming on the show. This is a podcast. It's called Skin Deep. It's run by me. I'm a board-certified dermatologist. I work in all 50 states. I do work in California, not, I think, the same place you're based out of, but a rural area, and I went to school at USC, so I have some ties there. I'm there a lot, actually. But a little bit about yourself, and then I want to say that I get pretty thirsty, so I might have some water in between the podcast.
Perfect.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, I'm Courtney. I am 39. I'll be 40 this year. I have many kids. I have four. The only girl I have, she's 20. So we've done skincare since she was young. And I have three boys, and they're ages 9 to 15. And that's been a challenge, getting teenage boys to care about their skin. But yeah, that's where we're at.
Okay, awesome. And then tell us a little bit about your background, and you're very young. I can't imagine having five kids. Being so young, but so I'm assuming you were a teen mom as well.
I actually, my oldest, my 20-year-old, I adopted her when she was four.
Okay.
Yeah. So no, not a teen mom. But I, you know, I was in retail for a long time and sales. And then when I was about 25, I started my family journey. So I just really focused. I took a long time to focus on that and raising my family. And now I'm just enjoying the benefits of it.
Okay, awesome. And then you're based, can you tell everybody where you're based from?
I'm in Santa Barbara, California. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I love driving to Santa Barbara. It's just, you know, 2 hours away from Los Angeles, and it's beautiful. Even the little towns around it.
Oh my God.
Solvang, they're just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It never gets old. I still stop in the middle of the road to take pictures. It's after so many years, it never gets old.
Yeah. And one of the most beautiful drives, very historic, like ranches and things like that, or missions that they have. It's lots of history of California and when the state was founded and things like that. Tell us a little bit about, are you able to, I actually have no kid, so I kind of don't know what to ask you.
Let me just talk about my 15-year-old son. He is a challenge already in general, mm-hmm. and I love it. I love every second. But he has definitely, you know, I try to teach them basics. We start with basics. Just wash your face when you wake up, wash your face before you go to bed. And even just twice a day was hard. So, okay, well, just wash your face at the end of the day. And I think once he started noticing, you know, they start liking girls and they want to be noticed, and he's starting to get some texture on his skin, or he's not taking care of it or washing. So we really just started with basics, washing your face, using a good moisturizer with some sunscreen. And I don't even tell him what's in it. I just put that on. And it's pretty simple. And, you know, it's just those little things that make a big difference.
Awesome. And do you have nannies, or how do you take care of all five kids?
No, just, and there's only four.
Oh, there's four. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But that's a lot.
It is. I don't have nannies. It's hard to have. I'm definitely, I like to do things my way. And so I did experiment with nannies here and there, and I like doing it myself. And if they're at the ages now where I don't need much help. They have their bikes, and so it's nice.
Okay, excellent. And are you did you you mentioned that you worked in sales and things like that in retail. Were you at one point a stay-at-home mom, or do you have did you work most of your motherhood and and yeah.
I did. I worked, well, I stayed home. I was a stay-at-home mom for 10 years. And it's my dream life. You just get to enjoy your family. And once they all started going to school and they got a little bit older and didn't need me around as much, I started just part-time work here and there, just for fun. And yeah, just to get you out of the house.
Okay, awesome, excellent. And then is your family close by on Santa Barbara as well, or?
A lot of my family, well, I only have my dad and my brother close by, and they are, I mean, I can't get rid of them. So it's lovely. I love having them around. But the rest of the family is kind of spread out all over the country. And so, yeah, I have my dad and my brother, and they spend a lot of time with us. A lot of football games. They do, never missed a game.
Okay, excellent. And then how about although you weren't a teen mom, you must have been really young when you met your significant other. Tell us about that kind of relationship and dynamic, and then also about adopting.
Okay, well, so I was 23 when I met my kid's father, and we were married for 15 years. He had a massive stroke 4 years ago, so I've kind of transitioned into caregiver, which was an adjustment, but we figured it out, and the kids all we all just kind of worked together to take care of him. When I met him, he already had a 2-year-old daughter, and she is just amazing. I loved her immediately. And then I raised her with him, and when she turned 18 on Mother's Day, she asked me to adopt her.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. And a couple of things that I was also going to ask. Let me see here. Do your kids go to a dermatologist? Because acne is really common in youth. I think teens, preteens. What did you do when I'm assuming at one point your kids probably had acne because it's really, really common. Even I had acne as a dermatologist, but what did you do? What were your go-tos?
Well, we're actually kind of going through it now. We're in the thick of it. So his skin is it's just not looking great. And so I want to take him to a dermatologist. I haven't yet, but we're just focusing on keeping the skin clean and not picking your face. That's a big one for, I feel like, teens and preteens. They just want to pick at it and mess with it. Yeah, and hydration. I make sure he hydrates. That's the biggest, what I've noticed is the biggest difference in my skin is hydration internally.
And then do you use like mostly over-the-counter products, any prescription products that you like?
For him, I use over-the-counter face wash that's sensitive for sensitive skin. And then just, I think it's CeraVe maybe that we use. that we've gone through so many. And I actually grew up, I never had an issue with my skin. I never had anyone telling me, make sure you wear sunscreen, make sure you moisturize your neck, and all those things that I was never taught. Because I guess maybe it wasn't necessary, or I don't know. But later on, as an adult, I got what I've heard is called adult acne, and I just could not stay on top of it. It was so hard. So once we both started having troubled skin, I go to a amazing esthetician in Santa Barbara. Her name's Taylor Page, and she's just super knowledgeable. She has tons of information that she gives you, and she does teen facials. So she'll teach your teen how to take care of their skin or what's happening with their skin and more, and a lot of internal things as well that can help keep your skin under control. She's amazing.
Okay. Yeah, I just looked her up. And estheticians are different from dermatologists. I just bring it up because I just interviewed a Disney star that was talking about her esthetician, but she's never been to a dermatologist.
Yeah.
We're more, we have, in terms of our licensure, as well as our education, a lot more years, but also we can do procedures that are considered medical. They're more invasive. We do superficial ones too, like lasers, but also more invasive treatments, surgeries. We do a lot of similar things, chemical peels, the hydrofacials, all those things.
Right.
But also we do prescription skincare, which estheticians can't do, of course, because right, it's outside of their scope. And a lot of acne requires a prescription. I'm even on a prescription for acne, and I'm almost 40. I have clear skin, but I still do a prescription to just keep my skin clear, and also for anti-aging purposes. I like to tell the world about it. But yeah, I still have prescriptions that I use that are geared towards acne, but also anti-aging and just keeping the skin blemish free. And believe it or not, if I don't use it, if I leave to California or Alaska for a week of work, my face will turn into a big pimple. So I still use it. A couple other things, about your husband's stroke, or the father of your children's stroke. I'm assuming he's pretty young, because you're pretty young, and that's a really young age to have this happen. How did that happen, and what did, I'm guessing what the doctors said about him being so young going through this, because I don't know anyone that's been that young going through a stroke personally.
It was a tear in his carotid artery. And had no idea. And he did jujitsu and all the kickboxing, all the things, and just never went to get, angiograms. I tell everyone I speak to, get an angiogram always. So, he had it. I can never say the word exacerbated.
Exacerbated, yeah.
It was a massive stroke. He shouldn't have survived that. But he did, and he is very disabled, but physically and cognitively. There was nothing. Had we gone to the doctor more and done all the tests that people just kind of like, I don't need to do that. I'm healthy. He's 50 now, but he was very healthy, very, very healthy. So it had nothing to do with his health or anything along those lines. It was just the way it happened.
The carotid artery is pretty thick. Was it traumatic, like from one of these jujitsu and contact sports?
I would say yes, there's really no way to know, as far as I know, how that happened. But I would assume after you, and he was also in the Navy and he did a lot. I was, I think just a lifetime of, I couldn't tell you.
Trauma.
Yeah.
But it happened right after a physical activity, or it's just he was just resting.
The tear was there. And the stroke happened during his jiu-jitsu class. The truth is, had he been at home, I would have never known. Because it's a lot of people don't know what to look for in that. I honestly didn't even really know what a stroke was. And so he was in his jiu-jitsu class, and luckily he rolls with a doctor in his class who works at the emergency room. And there was also a woman who works in a neurological rehab. So they knew right away what was happening and rushed him to the hospital. They had everything ready and waiting. They had to do five stents in his carotid artery. We had an incredible surgeon who just happened to be in town at the time. So yeah, it all just kind of it worked out.
Wow. Yeah. The carotid is a pretty thick artery. It's and the 50 is definitely really young. And that's kind of I'm not a really big fan, for those of you who know me, of contact sports or physical activity, where even where you do it with someone else. Never been skiing, to any of those things. Martial arts, not a big fan. It really leads to a lot of rashes, because you're kind of constantly tangled with people, like tinea, ringworm, impetigo. I kind of like sports when you're by yourself.
I like those too.
Kind of completely by yourself, predictable sports, like very low risk sports. That's probably
You're
my.
right. When you're in the gym, and even when you're alone, and you're touching everything, and you touch your face, and it can be really nasty.
Yeah, I know. And it's just jujitsu is really it can be violent, those sorts of sports. And tried it out, wasn't really my thing, ever. It
Yeah.
was never really my thing, and not something
Either.
I encourage patients to do. But and then how long ago did that happen with the stroke?
4 years ago this week, actually.
Wow, yeah. And so you talk about being a caregiver with your kids and yourself. What possibilities do people have of overcoming this if they don't have any family support?
I think about that often. Very fortunate that we had have so much support from his family and my family. And I think if someone were going through this without that kind of support, it would be extremely difficult, if not impossible. I mean, caregiving is expensive, and insurance doesn't cover a lot of it. It helps. But this is going to be a forever thing. So it's something that you have to kind of take into consideration, the cost and who is around you all the time. You don't want to, it's very hard to find someone you can be around all day. But yeah, I'd say if someone didn't have that kind of support, it would be extremely difficult. I think about it all the time. I don't know how anyone would be able to.
Yeah, certainly I can't imagine being a caregiver and a physician at the same time.
Yeah.
A couple other things. What sorts of things can he do by himself, and what sorts of things do they need help with?
Not much he can do on his own. He's still has a function in his right side. So he is able to kind of help with transfers. And we're, even today, 4 years later, we're still learning how to find some sort of independence for him, whatever it may be. Even the tiniest little things make him feel like he's doing something on his own. That was the biggest thing for him, was, you know, being in the military and doing all these, what you'd consider very like masculine sports and things like that, and not being able to take care of himself anymore, go to the bathroom alone, those kinds of things. So it was really difficult to adjust.
Okay. Yeah. We know about a lot of skin conditions that can happen if you are dealing with a stroke. There's actually quite a few things, or anything neurologic, like that develop. For example, I can think of one, seborrheic dermatitis, dandruff, gets.
Oh, gosh, I didn't know that that was even associated, but we have really struggled with that.
Yeah, that can get really bad with stroke and any sort of neurological condition. It can get really, really severe and chronic. But that's one thing I can think of that, you know, caregivers are probably dealing with. That's just one of them that I can think of. What other things? What does the outlook look like? Has there been improvements? I'm sure you get, you know, if you sit down with his doctors, but with rehab, what does the outlook look like for the next few years?
I think we are kind of at baseline. I think we're, you know, we're at, we've, like I said, there's always little things that we, that it's the little accomplishments that we kind of focus on now. So if he can pull his pants up on his own, or, you know, those kinds of things. So I'd say the outlook is probably going to be pretty similar to now, with little minor accomplishments here and there, which are not so minor when you're in his position.
The
rehab never stops. We never stop rehab. It's every day, everything, anything can be therapy. Picking something up or finding something to the left. He has left neglect. So scanning over and, you know, things like.
Okay, excellent. And then other things, okay, what questions did you have for me?
I do have some questions. Well, now I have another question. I'm very curious to learn more about the dandruff that comes with neurological disorders. That's very intriguing to me. We've really struggled with it, and he's gotten the prescription shampoos and
so it's just really common with I want to say conditions, neurological conditions, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, HIV patients, but also patients that suffer from a stroke. You know, they're fine before the stroke, but then after the stroke, it just becomes, you know, really, really bad. And it's not really fully understood. It's probably related to changes in oil production and your immune system response. And then it can be worsened by stress, which exacerbates neurological conditions. It affects hormone levels. And it just leads to increasing flaking, you know, flaking in oil production. And I do have a lot of patients that have had strokes and stuff, and I was seeing them sometimes that the flakes are just, you just wipe them off and they just come right back. So it's really important to have prescription skincare. I had really bad dandruff in medical school and I was like, what is this? And I just, it made me want to scratch. And then as I scratched more, it got worse. And then the hair started looking even worse and started even looking more oily. And the first thing people grab is things like Head and Shoulders or Celestine Blue. And unfortunately, none of that works.
Right.
It's just not potent enough, you
No,
know?
it
And
makes no difference for when you're in that stage of dandruff. It's like it's regular shampoo.
yeah, correct. So we also treat with a with topical steroids that help control the itching, but it's kind of like sebum regulation. And then it is chronic, so you want to keep the shampoos. I really like the shampoos, even the, though if it's it might just be on the face. For me, I even had it on my eyebrows. I would just touch my hair and just pick off sebum. That's how bad it was. And then miraculously, it just, you know, poof, it was gone when I graduated from medical school because all the stress was gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just really never had dandruff again. And but dandruff, you can commonly see it in people, but it's when it gets, it starts affecting your quality of life, or when people start noticing it, or when you're kind of removing or shaking off the flakes from your shirt or your collar, or just starting to get embarrassing. You can even get lots of itching with it, and kind of residue and redness and inflammation that it starts to become a problem. And it can even smell because sebum kind of has this cheesy, you know, this rotten cheese smell to it. Lots of people think, okay, well, you haven't washed your hair or something like that. Well, no, that's not the case. You can wash hair, people with dandruff, over and over and over again, and once it'll, and you'll still get dandruff.
Right.
Because it's dry, it's more dandruff just starts appearing. This is not about being dirty or how much you wash or anything like that. It's really what you're putting in it and
Yeah.
how you're regulating the flora. I think it's kind of like an imbalance overgrowth. It has a fungal component to it,
Yes.
an inflammatory component to it, and then that's why you treat with an antifungal and an anti-inflammatory with it. And it's we don't really understand why it's worse with neurological conditions, but I certainly know lots of stroke patients out. They were fine before, and then
Yeah.
all of a sudden their dandruff is out of control.
That is so interesting. I had no idea the two were even related.
Yeah, they're really good.
That you mention it, I'm thinking of all these other things, you know, like his body in general is also very tight and he doesn't move and he doesn't stretch out. So creases and, you know, there's just always some sort of rash or funky something going on.
Yeah, definitely. There's an altered nerve function in stroke patients, and it leads to altered skin sensation because being able to feel things is very important. You know, there's conditions where people actually can't feel pain and they continuously get hurt, or you know, they get burned. They start, there's actually conditions like that where you just can't feel pain. Rare. But that exists. And then kind of that sort of might happen in some stroke patients. You know, they might not feel tingling, pain, and they might just have some numbness in an area. And this actually can affect your self-care. You can neglect that area because you don't feel it. And that just, it's important to feel when something is wrong, basically, because you can address it. Fungal conditions tend to happen when someone's immobile for a while. You can get ulcers. You can get more moisture and skin folds. Athlete's foot, candida, is a big one. You know, and the skin folds, if the skin's constantly folded or touching in an area, it just also will lead to what we call intertrigo or candidiasis. You want to always try to be moving, and do look at people's skin. on a regular basis, moisturize, and try to treat any issue. I always tell my patients it's so much easier to treat a problem early on than later on. You know, you want to address something right when you see it. Might be annoying to go to a physician with a patient that's has a stroke, but there's things like telehealth, you know, like we're doing now, and then just with good photos. I do a lot of telehealth. In fact, that's what I'm known for. And you can actually resolve a lot of things that way and feel good about yourself that you're trying to resolve an issue before it turns even bigger. Pressure sores are really common if you're bedridden and you have limited mobility. The key is 2 hours to move every 2 hours. They teach us that at the hospital because you'll see an area of prolonged redness, and that's just the start of an ulcer. And then once it starts breaking down, common areas are the backs of the foot, heels, sacrum, elbows. It gets really hard to close. And then, of course, that can get infected, and there's different stages. It can even go as far as bone. And that gets really, really bad. Using kind of alternating pressure beds and having somebody help you, like you say, it's really expensive to deal with. And then what other things? Contact dermatitis. So adhesives and things that people use on the skin sometimes lead to more problems. They could make, you know, the skin red and itchy and inflamed, and they're not so great to use. The skin becomes drier in a lot of stroke patients, also with age, but it just becomes drier. This, again, is kind of leading back to the seborrheic dermatitis. The inability to perform self-care or be that awareness of, hey, I have a problem, let me change my positioning or address this issue, can lead to discomfort, itching, and just people that continuously scratch. I have a patient actually that I see that comes, she was coming every 2 weeks, but she has a problem where she scratches all the time.
Oh, no.
Not aware of it. And then that leads to skin breakdown and, you know, wounds all over the place. And then not really aware that she's kind of scratching her hair off sort of thing. And then that leads to more problems, and it can lead to scarring and bad issues like that. The swelling, sometimes patients with strokes can have swelling or what we call edema, where it's just kind of really, really swollen on the limbs due to this immobility. It can start impacting the circulation, and it can lead to tight, like what you were talking about, tight, shiny skin, and then increase the risk of it breaking down even further. And then I'm guessing the type of stroke he had was hemorrhagic, right? Not a clot. Yeah.
Actually, it was like he hit the jackpot of everything. We found out during the process that he had antiphospholipid syndrome, which is essentially sticky blood. So he had hundreds of blood clots in all of his limbs. And when he was given the blood thinner, everyone takes it, but he can't come to find out he had HIT, which is, and don't make me even try to say it, hypothrombosis. I don't know what it was, but he essentially had an allergic reaction and to the blood thinner, and it just made it worse. So now we do a shot in his tummy every day for the blood clots, and the antiphospholipid syndrome is a I'm blanking on the name of it.
I'm just looking up, it's heparin induced thrombocytopenia, what you had.
Don't make me try to say that.
Yeah, I forgot about it because I actually had these sorts of patients my intern year, and I never saw them again in dermatology. But it actually was a thing that you had to be careful with patients. And then intravascular lipid syndrome, yeah, increased blood clots. They have the antibodies, lupus anticoagulant, and thrombosis. And
it was a jackpot. He got all, if you could get it, he got it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's, yeah, not so common to have all these things. And he was never a smoker. Was he ever a smoker?
Oh, no. No. It was very, very healthy.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting. And so what did you do for your children, knowing that their dad had this? Did they undergo some sort of genetic testing? And
so my oldest, she did hers and she was all good. But yeah, now we're gonna make sure everyone else gets tested. And yeah.
Okay, excellent. And then where was he treated? At the Cottage Hospital? Is it Santa Barbara Cottage? Okay. Yeah, I had friends.
Santa Barbara Cottage. We love Cottage Hospital. All the doctors, the nurses are incredible. He couldn't do rehab at Cottage because he was in the ICU for, I think, 19 days. And he wasn't repositioned enough. So he had a bed sore on his coccyx that was stage 3. It was very, very bad. So he wasn't able to do his rehab at Cottage. We came to LA and did, it's a Cedar Sinai and UCLA together. CRI is what it's called. They're amazing. They were so wonderful. He was there for a couple months. So we've hit all the points.
Okay. You said Cedars. He was at Cedars in Los Angeles.
That I'm trying to think of what it's called. It's the there they were. It was someone told me it's like if Cedar Sinai and UCLA had a baby. That's their baby.
Okay. Cool.
Let me see. But they were so wonderful, and it's such a beautiful place too. I love Los Angeles.
Yeah, interesting. And then I think
California Rehabilitation Institute.
Okay, cool, excellent. Yeah. And then any other questions for me?
I am actually,
yeah,
now that you mention estheticians and dermatologists are so different, and my son is having such a hard time keeping up with his skin, I think we should make him a dermatologist appointment.
Okay, yeah, I'm happy to see him. Yeah. We work 7 days a week. We work online and in person. I do actually work in person in California. I love going to Santa Barbara, but not there. I mean, although it is my dream to be kind of a national dermatologist and fly out to people, I actually was, we do house calls, we do. And I actually drove to a place in Miami Beach yesterday. The traffic was so horrendous. We ended up with the flattest tire when I got back home that you could ever imagine. Yeah, we have actually been fixing it all day because we had the photo shoot and the podcast today. My dad spent the whole day fixing the car from the home visit that we did as a courtesy. I work online mostly, 75% almost or greater online, but we do have a brick and mortar in Coral Gables, Florida. We have a partnership with the Hyatt Hotel in Coral Gables. It's a nice Mediterranean looking neighborhood in Miami. In the center of Miami, our office is in downtown Coral Gables. Wow. And so we have the lowest rates you could get at the Hyatt for anyone that wants to see us in person. But things like acne are very easy to treat online with good photos. And it's actually a virtual just like this. It's HIPAA compliant. It's transcribed. We have a BAA. I have the compliant BAA through Google Workspace that I signed back in 2021. A lot of doctors use it. It's transcribed just like this. So you'll see the visit notes, and it's very low key. You can do it from anywhere. And I do have a California medical license as well as all 50 states. Yeah, we only do medical advice through appointments just because we have to have everything documented. That is what they expect, and they just get stricter and stricter on documentation. But we're pretty affordable. We do take a lot of insurances. One thing you should know about insurance is that you have to apply in every state. You have to have a physical location in it almost for most insurances, I think, except a couple only, like Aetna. Medicare is kind of once you're enrolled, you're nationwide. Aetna is the same thing. But when I tried to do enrollment with different insurances in different states, I was actually told you need an address. I actually got rejected from Medi-Cal. My practice did because we didn't have an address in California. I am credentialed with a lot of insurances in California, but through the practice I work at, which is a tribal health clinic, that is very selective about what patients they take just for the, from an insurance perspective. We've had people drive 3 hours to be seen in California and have to drive back. And I never understood why. It's not my practice. I don't know why they will turn people away, but they have such strict rules with insurance and reimbursement that they actually rather turn people away. I don't even understand why. I would never do that in the office, but, yeah. So long story short, we're credentialed where we can, but obviously I can't get an address in all 50 states, but I can see a patient in all 50 states. I just can't promise that I take their insurance, but all our prices are actually online. We're really transparent. We charge one-to-one with Medicare. So the price of whatever it is that you're getting, if you're getting a cyst removed, an abscess drained, if you look up in the CMS guidelines, our price is almost exactly the same as that. So we pretty much try to be very fair, okay? Whereas some practices here, some concierge practices that I collaborate with, they charge 4-to-1 Medicare. So the price you have on the CMS website, multiply that by 4, and that's what they're charging for a visit. We don't do that because we are pretty fair with our patients, and you know, that's pretty much it. But yeah, I think virtual is perfect. Unless someone has, really needs a procedure, or they just like driving to the office, traffic here is horrendous, but we, you know, open in person because we found that some patients, although they love being able to see you online, they still want the possibility of seeing you in person. Well, that's fine. I have an in-person office. And there are some patients that they just want to go to the office. They don't care about parking or anything like that. They just want to be there. There are some patients that have to go in person because they need a procedure done or biopsy done, or we're concerned about skin cancer. And that's fine. But for things like acne, rashes, online is fine, especially if you are in a place where you cannot go out. And, you know, although your husband has had a stroke, I can't imagine how hard it is to go to the doctor. We have patients with autism where they cannot actually sit in a doctor's office. They would be screaming, trying to fight people. And I have a lot of patients like those that just see me online.
Mm-hmm. It's just easy. And like you said, it's so simple. Something as simple as acne, which is not simple, but simple to see online and fix over a Zoom call. It's really cool.
Yeah. And we do a lot of Accutane too. I mean, there's different extremes. You know, there's people that just do topicals and they just get by with topical treatment for maintenance, or that's the only thing they need. There's people that need oral medications. You know, that's when you get to more moderate, severe, or acne on the back and things like that. And then there's people with Accutane where they need a monthly appointment, but, you know, that's what turns some people off. Oh, okay, requires a monthly appointment, but we can do it online. Before COVID, all those patients needed to be seen in person. I remember people driving all the way to Cleveland Clinic to see me sitting in traffic, or we couldn't fit them in because, you know, it takes 15 minutes to room somebody in person. and check them out. Well, all those patients can be seen online. So that's it.
I love it.
Yeah, but you can find me online on it's Miami Derm because originally I intended to just practice here. But it's more like nationwide derm. But yeah.
Okay, well, I found you on Instagram and I was loving scrolling through.
Thanks.
It seemed super educational, very helpful.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Well,
Cool.
thank you so much, Courtney, and have a great Saturday. Thanks for coming on the show on this weekend. And we dove into a topic, skincare conditions and neurological stages that a lot of people don't know about. We just brushed over it in medical school, and it's something I see a lot in patients. And have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you for having me. You are lovely. I can't wait to talk to you again.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Have a great day. Thank you. Bye.